Hey everyone, I'm Chris Hall and you're listening to the Downtime Podcast. If you're looking for the most in-depth insight into the world of downhill and enduro mountain biking, then this is the podcast for you. First up, thanks for your support. I love reading your messages and hearing how much you're enjoying the podcast. If you want to help out, then there are a few things that you can do. The big one is spreading the word. Please make sure that your riding buddies know what they're missing out on if they're not listening. Also, if you fancy showing that you're part of an ever-growing group of riders who are listening, learning, and getting faster as a result, then we've got all sorts of exclusive gear over at downtimepodcast.com/shop. And all of the proceeds from that help keep this thing going. So thank you to everyone that's been spreading the word and buying the merch. Secondly, thanks to this month's supporting partner, PNW Components. Founding partner Aaron Kirsten was on the podcast a few weeks back, so have a listen to that if you want to know more about this awesome little company from Seattle who are making some killer products at great prices. They've recently launched some new bars that are designed specifically for modern bikes with longer reach to help you feel more comfortable on the bike. And what's even better is that 5% of those sales go to a charity that helps kids get into mountain biking. Pretty awesome. You can see their full range at pnwcomponents.com. That's the letters P, N, and W, and then the word components.com. They're kindly offering Downtime listeners 10% off their entire range until the end of June. All you need to do is use the code DOWNTIME at the checkout. All the links you need are over on our website, downtimepodcast.com. While you're there, don't forget to subscribe, as not all of our episodes are available on other websites. It's completely free, and it means you'll get every episode delivered as soon as it drops. There's a subscribe page on the website to help you do it. And on that page, you'll also find a place where you can join our newsletter and that keep you up to date with everything that's going on with the podcast. Okay, this week we've got another one of my chats from Fort William, and this time it's Sam Dale. Sam's a super interesting guy, having come from the privateer ranks up to the pro teams, taken a World Cup podium and a load of top results, and then decided that the pro team world wasn't for him. Sam refocused and he's now riding and racing the way that he wants to. So we sat down outside his van in the evening sun and chatted about what he's learned along the way. Unfortunately, Sam broke his collarbone at Fort William while he was on an absolute flyer of a run, so I'd like to take this opportunity to wish him all the best for a speedy recovery. Right, without further ado, here's Sam Dale. Sam Dale, welcome to the Downtime Podcast. Thanks for taking some time out of your day.
Well, thank you. Pleasure to be here.
Yeah, it's good. Well, yeah, where are we? Tell everyone where we're sat.
We are sat outside the van, tucked away in, it seems like it was an old sand quarry. But yeah, there's a few jumps here, a little bit of a motocross track, a few trial sections from a couple of weeks ago. And about 200 metres that way is the Fort Bill World Cup getting set up.
Yeah.
But we're well away from it here and it's very calm, peaceful.
Yeah, it is like 2 minutes away from the melee and
super chilled.
Yeah. And we're on mid-watch, but at the minute things are okay.
Yeah, we'll see.
Yeah. Yeah, fingers crossed.
We won't say anything just yet.
All right, cool. Well, let's start from the beginning then for you and tell us a little bit about how bikes came into your life.
Well, from day one, really. Learned to ride when I was two or three and I've had an older brother who's been 5 years older than me. And my dad and my granddad have all been, well, dad and granddad were big into motorbikes and my old man motorbike trials. And then we've just grown up with them about, obviously used bikes as nipping to and from places and going riding when we're on holiday and stuff. But then, yeah, my brother just picked up a dirt mag when we're on holiday once and went from there. I mean, yeah, dirt mag was the dog's danglies and you get it every month and just be frothing on bikes. And we'd have a game where we'd go through it all, start to finish, and pick out the most expensive bike bits we could and build the most expensive bike and then do it with the cheapest bike we could. And yeah, that was just like your entertainment. There was no mobile phones, nothing. We had a dirt mag between two of us.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Simple times.
Yeah.
Cool. So what was your first mountain bike? Do you remember it?
Nah. Well, it was blue. Rigid.
Yeah.
And it even had blue horns on it. Cast off from my brother. Not sure where my dad got it from. But my first proper, like, when I got into it was a Sun, I think. that was rigid. And then I come home from holiday once and my granddad had put a set of forks on it for me.
Sweet.
So that was pretty good. And then it went from there.
Yeah.
Just bikes, bikes, bikes.
Nice. And was it always the kind of the gravity side and dirt jumps and that kind of the dirt mag influence, or was there a bit of cross country and exploring and that side as well?
Yeah, well, actually when I was getting into it proper, I was too young to race downhill. So we went and did some cross country races, like the Midlands Super Series and that. But then we also did some pretty big rides, like 2 or 3 days. We did a coast to coast when I was about 14, I think, maybe even younger. My dad was very, we went to the lakes once actually on holiday. And he set off walking around this lake with us all. We were pretty young. And he's like, yeah, yeah, it's only 4 miles this. So we walked for a couple of hours and there was still no sign of us getting back to where we wanted to be. And we're like, yeah, you sure it's 4 miles? And basically had us on, and it was a 10-mile walk, but from the get-go he was adamant it was 4 miles, so we'd get round it. And that's pretty much how it went on the bike rides. It was like, yeah, we're only going over that hill, and you get up to the top of the hill. It's like, oh, yeah, it's this hill here. And it is just, yeah. It was always trips full of surprises with my old man, so yeah. that was fun.
Dragged you into it.
So going back to it, we did the coast-to-coast from, I think we went Newcastle to the Lake District over 3 days, like camping out in youth hostels and stuff.
Awesome.
Me and my brother, my uncle and my dad. And then we did another couple of rides where we'd ride from home and mum would drop like sleeping bags and bits of food off at a spot. We'd ride all day, get there, go to the next spot the day after and bits like that. So that's where I got real into mountain biking. And then when I was old enough to race downhill, yeah, I was there, ready for it.
So what were your first races then? Was it, what area was this?
Bringewood, Hopton, all Pier Cycles, really. Yeah. We did a lot of Leisure Lakes up in Preston. They had a little cross-country series, and that was only 50 minutes from home, so we'd go and do them. But, yeah, Pier Cycles is where it was at. Mark Beaumont, Petey, Atherton's, everyone's there, and it's just a great place to learn how to ride a bike.
Yeah, and how did you get on then? Can you remember your first downhill race?
First downhill. I think it might have been national champs 1 year. I raced cross country on the one day and the downhill on the other. I think it was on a cone of stuff. And I'd had a paper round at the time and worked so much to save up for a new rear wheel because I needed one with a disc brake hub. New rear wheel and a rear hydraulic disc brake because I only had one on the front at the time. So I was buzzing disc brakes, first time ever, like, this is real. And then one of the last practice runs, jumped the last jump over, well, I think I overjumped it, flat bottomed it, wheel blow up, and I didn't have a spare, obviously, because this was my only setup.
Yeah.
So we pulled the V-brake and my dad's cross-country wheel off his bike and I raced finals on that and I think I was 7th or something. But yeah, I had quite a few years, just me, Joe Smith, Ratty, we'd all be battling and then Danny was the year below us and Rory was the year above us.
Yeah.
So when we moved up a year, we had Rory to race and then the year after Danny had come up. So it was a real good competitive little group of riders that we grew up with.
It was a wicked scene. Yeah, nice one. And how did that kind of move on from national level races and get to opportunity to go to World Cups? Because you were privateer at this time.
Yeah, 07. I was riding for Solid, Cole Williams and Wayne Taberner, both from like the Peak District area, so just knew him around basically. Both good dudes. They hooked me up with a bike and Carl actually got together a UCI trade team because you needed 1 point, I think it was, but because I was first year junior, I wasn't able to collect points as a youth. So we're coming into the year, no points, really wanted to race a World Cup. So Carl set up a team, and I think Adam Brayton was on it, me, Carl, Marples maybe, DC. I think there was about 10 of us all chipped in 100 quid each or whatever. Sweet. To raise the money. Because you could race if you're a UCI team.
Yeah.
Regardless of how many points you had. So we got there and it was actually, it was amazing. Me and my dad went, got to the airport, Ralph Jones was on it. It was just Brits abroad holiday, big games of football on the beach. We all stayed in the hotel over the road from the beach. Track was mint. Yeah, Vigo 07.
And how was it going from national up to World Cup level? Was it intimidating?
Nerve-wracking, mate. Like, I'd only ever seen Vigo on Earth. So you either saw all the crashes or everyone going flat out. You never just saw people cruising on the video like that. So, well, you didn't know what to expect, but it was all about qualifying as well because there was no junior category, so we were just chucked in. The only thing that put you as a junior was on the result sheet. You had a little dot next to your name so you could count which junior where you were at, but you had to qualify, and it was mint. Best times ever. Like crashing in quali runs, getting tangled up, jumping back on your bike and still making it in. It were
sweet.
Yeah, it was ace.
Yeah, and you went on from that and had some pretty good results. So silver at Junior Worlds in 2008.
Yeah, well, my first World Cup, I was 18th, I think, which stood as, I think G might have got 18th for his first World Cup, but other than that, it might have changed recently, but there was quite a few years where it was just me and him from the UK.
That's a hell of a result in the elite field, right?
Yeah, the rain helped, but hence the crash in quali, but we don't need to know.
Yeah, we don't need to talk about that. Sweet. And then, and then 2008 Junior Worlds silver medal.
Yeah. Again, just real good times on the Cannondale. I had Giacomo as my mechanic, who is still about these days, and he mechanic for Petey previous to that. So I was in good hands, good team. Yeah, second place. Rat was first, Remy Tyrion third.
Yeah. Gnarly old track as well, Val d'Isère.
Yeah, if anything, it was better then, though, because it was fresher, and it was just felt like you were riding on clouds. Whereas now it's just faster and rougher and hard pack and gnarly.
And did that result open any doors for you, like with teams and stuff? Did people start to pay more interest?
Yeah. Well, it was a funny year, that, because it was 08 and it was the credit crunch.
Oh, yeah.
So Cannondale stopped. They were just going to focus on cross country. So that ended. And I ended up being a privateer after that. I bought a Giant Glory. Sold all the bits off it and then managed to get support with suspension and components and all bits and bobs like that. And then selling all the little bits actually paid for the frame. So it was a bit of a just juggling things about for a while. But
making it work.
Yeah, I enjoyed it. I've always been into like camping out. When we were younger, we'd go to the races in the van. We'd never bother going to and from the race site for accommodation or out, so it's just like being on holiday, one big holiday.
Do you prefer doing it in that way?
Yeah, 100%, to be honest. It's efficient. I mean, if you're here for the race, literally the race is, like you say, 2 minutes there. Yeah. I don't have to worry about driving in and out. I don't have to worry about anything.
Yeah, because it is a bit, logistically, it's a bit of a nightmare if you're in that pits area, isn't it?
And even driving into town here, I mean, it's not the case every race, but after practice, you can be queuing for an hour to literally get back into Fort Bill because there's so many people and it's a pretty small little town, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah.
But yeah, got everything I need here in the van. Bikes, spares, food.
Nice.
Happy days.
Yeah, so comparing like privateer life to time on a factory team then. So you were with Madison Saracen for a while.
3 years, yeah.
Yeah.
13, 14, 15. Yeah, 3 years. And then 16 and 17 with GT.
Yeah. How did you find it being in a factory kind of support, you know, fully supported team like that?
I enjoyed it, mate. Yeah. It was a big contrast going from, well, my first experience on the factory setup was with the Cannondale lot. That was just a huge eye-opener because I'd finished my joinery apprenticeship and just went straight. Literally finished it 6 months early so I could go and race and set off not knowing what to expect. First dude I met, Duncan Riffle, and he's great. Like, I learned so much from him, and just to hang out with an American as well. Like, you don't get him in Macclesfield, so it was such an eye-opener to... He's still into bikes, he's fast on a bike, but he couldn't be further from what I am,
right.
You know what I mean? And it was mint, like... It was like having a big brother that I'd never met before. He looked after us and opened my eyes to so many cool new things. It was pretty cool, that.
Yeah.
And yeah, the whole team, Dan... Team manager was German, Giacomo Italian, and then Hugh Switchman, he was Dutch. And I'd literally gone from a joinery workshop in an old farm building to this, and it was mad.
Eye-opening.
Yeah, it was great. Learned so much in that 1 year, not only about the biking, but everything else. And then, yeah, the factory setups were just... even to this day, they're pretty cool. Like, I've just been over there now looking in some, and it's everything you could ever need is just there laid out in front of you. And it is what you need to, I think, what you need to compete with them boys, because it's down to fractions of seconds, and it helps. All the little things help.
Yeah, making your life easy over the weekend's got to help, hasn't it, I guess?
Yeah.
Yeah. And so you had some good years with those guys. You had a fifth place in Lourdes in 2015.
Yeah, fifth there. I think I had a seventh place in South Africa 1 year, the opening, or an eighth, and then went to Cairns and it rained and I had a stinker of a run. Crashed over the bars, crawling around in the dirt, and hopped back on, and I think I was seventh, but only like 5 seconds off a win. Or maybe 7 seconds off a win. And that was where I thought that...
Could have had it.
Yeah, but whatever. It's only a bike race, isn't it?
It is. That is very true. Yeah. So what led to the decision to move away from the factory side of things and do something a bit different?
There was never like a point where I changed my mind as such. It just... Like with the Madison lot, it was, I learned tons and tons of stuff, like bike set up, worked a lot with Fox, and even with dudes from Shimano developing that new pedal they've got, the new clip pedal. And that was just professional as it comes, really. I had a really good coach, Phil Dixon, and I've trained with Millway, like... It's been like they're both so knowledgeable, and you just got to listen. Like they've spent so long focusing on such a very intricate subject, and they're on it. They know how to get from point A to point B in the right way, in the best way possible. On the Madison lot, super super serious. And it was a growing team at the time, like each year it was getting bigger and the bikes were getting better, and if stuff needed changing, it would literally be a couple of weeks and there'd be a new link or just new rear end. It was constant evolution. It wasn't like big periods of time waiting for stuff. but then it got to the point where I wasn't enjoying it, and we were going to a race to win. And if you didn't win, it was a failure.
Right.
Like, I remember finishing fifth in Lourdes. I was buzzing that first World Cup podium. And, like, I was on such a buzz. And I got back. And not that I was expecting everyone to be stoked for me, but it was just full-on tear the pits down, put it away, We weren't leaving till the next day. I was just like I've trained for 6 months, gone in on this like road pretty hard, like it's high risk sport.
Yeah.
And yeah, that was that. And it made me think why I was doing it and stuff like that. Then the GT deal came about, and that was a totally different approach. The good times, GT, good times. That's what I... When we first signed up for the team, it was like, oh, it's the good times crew, all this. Yeah. And I was like, yeah.
It was you and Brooke.
Me, Brooke, Wynn.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was a good gang, really. It was good turnout. But yeah, that was mint. Such a good setup, but the bikes were just outdated, to be honest. Like, we were turning up and on a bike that were 5 years old, and it was... people go around, oh, it was shit bike, blah, 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 and it wasn't a shit bike. Like, it was enjoyable to ride and what have you, but it was old. The tracks had changed, everything had changed.
Yeah.
Wheel sizes, all sorts of wheels coming out, yeah. It was just hard work being there, because I was trying hard, but crashing. I hadn't crashed bad for years, and then I broke a couple of bones the first season, which I'm not that into, to be honest. Getting injured always sucks.
It's not fun.
And then the second year, we were waiting for these new bikes, and one turned up, and it was a prototype, and it was like the practice of a race. And it was a test session, basically, and it was hard to be in a racer frame of mind when the bikes weren't ready.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
That's fair.
So... and then from there, you obviously get to a point where you're not getting any results. You're not willing to risk absolutely everything to potentially get a top 20 or a top 15. And I just lost the love for it. The tracks were changing big time. And I just needed something fresh.
Yeah.
Yeah,
yeah, fair play. And it's quite a brave decision, because you're on a salary, I would assume, to some extent.
Yeah.
So to kind of move away from that and follow your heart, I suppose, I guess, like, you want to get some enjoyment back into riding.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, it is a tough decision. Tough choices, but you got to make them, haven't you?
Yeah.
And it's my little, well, it's my life. And if I'm doing something and putting loads into it, and what I'm getting out of it isn't making me happy, I'm all right.
Time to change.
Yeah.
Yeah. So how did you approach that then? Because you need some level of money in order to live, right? That's a fact.
Yeah, I'm pretty... I wouldn't say I'm super stingy, but numbers are there, aren't they? And you've got to... Like, we could live till we're over 100 these days with what they've got us running on. But, yeah, there is that. Money's there, and you just got to be, smart, haven't you? Don't spend it all.
Yeah.
Save it. And van life, easy.
Living a cheap life.
Yeah, and food. It's not expensive to live healthy. And... water's pretty cheap and all.
This is true. So, go on, talk about the food side of it, because are you still on the vegan thing?
Yeah, I've got even... Well, I used to, up until very... Well, probably a couple of months ago now, I used to say I was 98% vegan, because I would let bits and bobs slip if it...
Tasted good.
Yeah, and sometimes just convenient.
Yeah.
Like a croissant from a shop, and you're just like, oh, look at that. But I've done a lot more reading and watching of things, and the more I read and look into it, it makes me not want to have anything to do with it.
Yeah. So was your initial move to veganism an ethical move, or was it a health thing, or what drove you there in the first place?
Well, doing all this racing, you learn a lot about nutrition, especially with Phil that taught me a lot about that. And we had like chefs and that working on teams, so. Yeah, and you are what you eat at the end of the day, so good fuel, good performance sort of thing. So yeah. I was aware of what I was eating and what times I was eating stuff, and stuff takes longer to digest, so you eat it here and blah, blah, blah. One thing leads to another, and then, yeah, ethical for every reason.
Yeah.
I've not found a bad reason, yeah. But personally, it was performance more than over anything. Because yeah. It was like, if you go vegan, you cut out a lot of shit, a lot of processed foods, a lot of nonsense you don't need. And yeah, went from there. And then, yeah, the more you look into it, I don't think it's good eating meat.
Fair enough. And what have you found are the benefits then for you from a performance point of view?
Well, first thing was, well, I've been dabbling. I hadn't eaten meat for a while, but I'd still been on the cheeses and milk and what have you. And we went to South Africa, and it's a very barbecue heavy country there. And I was like, yeah, it's all right. Wild animals over here, it's not like it's farmed and all the horrible conditions, blah blah blah. I'll go with it. Ate a bit and wasn't like, it didn't blow me away. I wasn't like, oh yeah, this is the best thing ever, but I was just like, right, but when I go home, I'm gonna do a solid effort to just have a clear out, go 100% no dairy, no meat, none of that. And within a week, I was just like getting up the stairs in what felt like two or three steps, and my energy was just up a notch, like, throughout the day.
Nice.
And it makes sense. Like, I was listening to a thing the other day that with our intestines being a certain length, which is like, I can't remember the exact thing, but it's like two-thirds of your body or something like right. that, which is the same as every other herbivore on the planet. Whereas all the meat-eating animals, like your tigers and your things with fangs and claws, their intestines are so short because it's so hard to digest, and it's such an effort to digest big lumps of meat that they just push it through them as quick as they can, take the good shit out, and then what's left is real bad. But yeah. With our gut being so long, it's just in there for, well, days, just trying to get out of you.
Okay.
You're constantly trying to break that down.
Yeah.
Which then takes me into the fasting thing, which totally backs it up, because when you fast, you're giving your digestive system chance to have a break, which then gives the organs supplying the digestive system with all the stuff to break the foods down, time to clean themselves, which then in turn cleans your body out.
Right.
So, yeah.
Sweet.
The simpler, lighter, easier to digest the food, I think it's better for you.
Yeah, and vegetables are cheaper.
Yeah.
Result.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Tin of chickpeas like 30p.
Living a dream.
Yeah.
Tell us a bit about the fasting then. Is that something you're into?
Like, I can't honestly say I've done it a hard, proper fast, but I try and do that intermittent fasting okay. where you only eat for 8 hours of the day.
Yeah.
And it's hard because by habit you talk, get up, eat, get up, eat. But after a while you're just like if I get up and try and eat now, I'm just not interested. So
when do you start eating? When's your first meal of the day normally?
I try and wait till after lunch and then eat up until about 8-ish.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Even over
after
a
midday.
Even over a race weekend, would you?
Nah.
No.
Just shovel it in.
Okay. Yeah. Fair enough.
Fuel.
When you're burning a lot, you need to kind of replenish.
Yeah. And it's yeah. Yeah.
Cool. All right.
When I'm chilling.
Yeah.
Fasting.
All right.
Cuz you aren't putting any fuel in. But then there's the juice fasts and the juice cleanses. So you are putting the good stuff in, but not the fibres.
Yeah.
So it's still not hard to break up, and it's giving your whole gut a bit of time to recover.
Interesting stuff.
Because recovery is key.
It is.
100%. More than training a lot of the time.
Yeah. Is that something that it took you a while to learn through the kind
Still
of...
not learned. Yeah. I have too much fun on bikes to... I think, well, there's days I've not ridden, but I've done about 3 days where I thought, right, today's a rest day and just put everything on hold, but I like doing things.
Then the sun comes out and
yeah.
The trails are
your
dry.
Your phone buzzes and, oh, right, yeah, he's going riding, right? That'll be half an hour. See you there.
But I guess with the program that you're on now, you've got a lot more flexibility in what you do with your time, yeah?
Yeah, and I'm not away as much. Like, well, with the Madison, well, with all of it, really, we were doing big training camps and, like, January, February, you'd be away for at least 2 weeks of both of them. Then March, you go testing, then April, racing.
Yeah.
And you put everything else on hold. It's hard to go from the race environment to back home and then just getting in the groove with everything back at home and then you're just all back to race environment. It's almost easier, I found, to do, if I'm going to race, I'll take the van and go to race for weeks. So, like, instead of back and forth, but I don't really want to be away from home for weeks and weeks and weeks now because I'm enjoying it. I like it.
Happy days.
It's a good place.
Yeah. Mm. Good stuff. So what was your approach then? So you've left GT, you've sort of lost the love of riding maybe a little bit, looking to get that back. How did you approach putting together, like, what does life for Sam look like now?
I wrote down everything I could do. So I finished school and did my joinery apprenticeship. So I can't say I'm a good joiner, but I know how to cut wood. Joinery. And then from that, I worked on canal boats with Josh's dad.
Yeah.
That was pretty cool. Well, there's options. You can literally do anything you want if you put your mind to it.
For sure.
And that's something I learned from racing. And as we said, like with Rob Copeland and people like that, they just simplify everything and basically anything you put your mind to, you can go after it. So, yeah, joinery, riding, coaching. My girlfriend she makes curtains and blinds.
Yeah.
So I fit them for her occasionally. Bits like that, you know, just doing things.
Cool.
But yeah, just wrote all my options out and went with some of them.
And does that mixture change? Like, are you constantly kind of just picking up whatever kind of it comes along? Is there a plan? Like, how do you kind of...
We've got some pretty good plans. Nothing set in stone. Like, I'm always open to new options and things like that. But I'm really enjoying... Well, I've only done one of the races so far, but the Andy Specifico.
Yeah.
Really enjoying that style of racing where you just fill a bag with food and water and set off for the day and you don't know any of the tracks. You don't know where you're going. You're just in the thick of it, going as fast as you can down a mountain and it's exciting.
Good adventure.
Yeah, real good adventure.
Yeah.
And you got to be smart, I think. You got to take everything you need. You got to ride smart so you don't kill your bike. You got to ride smart so you don't hurt yourself. It's so different to downhill, but it's still bike riding.
Yeah. And so do you prefer that to the EWS side of things? Because you've done a bit of that over the last few years.
Yeah, I did enjoy the EWSs that I did. Yeah, I enjoyed it quite a lot, actually. And I will do some more at some point. But I didn't really like the... I know not everyone does it, but the track walking thing. And I wasn't willing to... Not willing, but... It just wasn't right for me to go to a race 10 days before or a week, a full week before, to walk every track, to then practice them all once, to then race it. Yeah. I like the idea of it when they said, oh, it's one practice run, thinking, oh, great, everyone's just going to do one run and then race. But then when people walk it, it's like they've done three practice runs, and yeah, didn't fancy it.
Fair enough, but maybe at some moment, more in the future. Yeah.
Yeah.
So what are your plans on the racing side of things? So obviously we're at Fort William, it's a World Cup.
Fort Bill World Cup.
You have a jersey?
I have a jersey, yeah. I was a bit gutted, really, because I finished 27th here last year, and that didn't give me enough points to race another round, so I've had to go in the jersey, which isn't a bad thing. I did plan on going to Portugal to try and get some points earlier in the year, but it clashed with the Andes race and
right.
when we're in New Zealand also.
Yeah.
But yeah, World Cup here, race the national here. Then not long after this is Trans Provence.
Ah, you're doing that?
Yeah.
Sweet.
Which
the last
heard,
ever?
Apparently, yeah. I've heard nothing but good things about that event, so I'm looking forward to that one.
Yeah, sweet.
And then Mega Avalanche, that's not far after that. And then we've got a 50-1 jam at Revs, the National Champs weekend. So I'll probably end up racing National Champs as well as doing the jam stuff. What else is there?
Any more World Cups this year? Or
I don't think so. I did want to do Leger, but that's clashing with the Mega.
Ah, right, yeah.
Which, I mean, it's a bit frustrating.
It's a tricky decision, because Leger is a kind of cool, old-school venue, like, yeah, has the potential to be a great track.
Yeah. I've raced the Crankworx there the last couple of years, and that's one of the tracks where the flat pedals go back on.
Get a bit lively.
Yeah, it was nice to ride something like that again.
Yeah.
Proper downhill track.
Nice. Mm. But Mega's a good event, like elbow to elbow.
Yeah, and that's my favourite week, riding every year. I take my road bike, and on the Monday I'll do the hill climb from the valley floor up to Alpe d'Huez.
Yeah.
And obviously try and beat the previous year's time on my Strava. So, see how we get on this year.
Cool. And you're on the new V10 Santa Cruz, at least for downhill.
Yeah.
Yeah. What do you think?
Love it. Yeah.
How long have you had it?
Got it when we were in Rotorua, actually.
Okay.
For that track there. So that was one of the tracks I'd always seen on videos and never actually ridden that. So to get on that bike and... It was super dry, super dusty, really blown out. And I mean, it did feel rough and dusty, but I would have hated to have ridden it on a 27.5 or a smaller, older style downhill bike. Because going to the tracks I know on it, it's just like round a magic carpet. It's just traction everywhere, long, low. A bike for a big guy, which is something that I think has been missing from the sport for a while.
Yeah.
So a lot of little fellas going fast these days.
Yeah, true.
And Greg's tall, but he's on a bike bigger than this Sprinter, I think. XXL with XXL.
So what size is yours?
Just a large.
Right.
But it's actually larger than... It's actually larger. It's a little bit longer than last year's XL.
Okay.
And it's still in short mode. So I'm going to whip it into long mode for practice here, because it's high speed.
So how do you get on with setting everything up yourself? Are you pretty confident with getting it all dialed in, or do you get a bit of support from the guys here?
Yeah, I mean, it's the first year I've been back on RockShox since 2008. So it was a bit weird going into a different tent at a race, but they're all really helpful, and to be honest, they're really consistent, the fork, and I've not actually had to change them much.
Cool.
And I am one of them riders where I'll set it up to where it feels good and then learn how to ride it from there.
Okay.
As opposed to changing my bike all the time and
not a massive
not knowing
puzzler.
How it's going to react in certain situations.
Yeah. Sweet. So what are your hopes for the weekend? Do you come here with like an objective, or are you just here to have fun, ride your bike?
I'd like to have a top 20, to be honest. I was 27th last year, And I'd literally ridden that V10 once, the Thursday before, at Antistiniog. I finished 27th, and I think I was about 7 seconds off first. So not far off top 20 at all. Probably only 2 or 3 seconds. So, yeah, there is that, but I'm not going to be disappointed if it doesn't happen.
It's all good. Yeah. What does training look like these days then? So that's kind of a tricky balance if you're not racing.
I've not been to the gym for a long time. purely because I've always been bigger and heavier. And I thought doing all these longer distance enduro-y style races, if I can drop a few kilos, I'll be much less weight to carry on uphill, innit?
Yeah, it makes life easy, doesn't it?
But saying that, I've not actually lost any weight.
Huh.
I've lost fat, but still weigh the same.
Right.
So, must be this.
Power to weight's got better.
Heavy locks. but yeah, I just ride a lot.
Yeah.
I did quite a lot on my fixie in the winter months. And we actually did the Cheshire Ring on a group of us, which is 94 miles on the towpath on a fixie. Ended up being a 110-mile ride by the time we got there and back.
Yeah. That's a big day out.
Yeah. And you can't stop pedalling. I think we worked it out. It was about 95,000 pedal strokes.
That's ridiculous.
Yeah. So,
fair play.
Just I ride bikes as much as I can. And then for the strength side of it, I do quite a lot of digging and I try and ride my trials bike.
Okay.
And I'm not very good on that, so I always get stuck, so I have to lift it out of holes. And
keeps your weightlifting stuff on the go. Yeah. So do you still, obviously you've been up here for the BDS a few weeks back, do you still feel fit enough for a full race run of this track?
Yeah, I wasn't that out of breath when I got to the bottom here at the National. And I can thank all sorts for it really, but racing in Chile, you're at altitude and you get to they drove you to the top because the hills are that big. You'd spend days getting there on foot.
Yeah.
And they'd be like, oh yeah, this one's about 800 metres descent. The fastest time we've had down it before is about 19 minutes. And you're like, all right, thanks for letting us know. And yeah, if you do a few of them every day for a week, you come to a 5-minute and it feels like nothing.
Should be easy enough.
On a downhill bike too.
Yeah.
And they grade it for the World Cups.
Yeah.
So it's normally pretty smooth and nice to ride.
Cool. So if a good result came out of the bag on Sunday and a team of your choice approached you with a pro offer, would you ever consider going back to it?
Depends on the team, doesn't it?
Well, yeah, there's a big difference in there in the way they will operate. And
well, you've got to travel all year with them. Like, you wake up in the morning, the first people you're going to see are your teammates. So you want to be hanging out with cool people. Well, not necessarily cool, but enjoyable people, people that are going to lift the mood and make it a positive experience.
Yeah. So there are still kind of inklings in you then that you would do it if it was the right setup.
Yeah, I'd never say never.
Yeah.
But there's just so much other stuff to do, isn't there?
Yeah, life gets busy, doesn't it?
And loads of good stuff to do. It's not just like, I've done that for a while now, it's the rest is shit. It's like, woof. What?
Yeah, the world is your
oyster. You can literally do anything you want.
Yeah. Yeah, you've done some wicked projects.
We're very lucky over here, obviously. It's not like that everywhere in the world, but.
True. Yeah. So, out of all of the awesome trips and projects that you've been up to over the last few years since the kind of full time World Cup stuff, is there anything that stands out? Like, what have been some of the most enjoyable moments of that?
The most recent trip to Japan with Luce, Craig, Mark Scott, Gary Perkin and the Japanese lads we were out there with was, it's like nowhere I've been. That was ace, Japan, yeah. But then going back, like I was saying before about Vigo, first World Cup, like, just thinking back to it then, and we were playing footy on the beach, I was just in my head, I was smiling my head off. Like, yeah. It's all good. There are shit bits, but riding your bikes and hanging out with cool people, fun people, it's not bad.
No. And 50-1's been a big part of all of that, and it seems to have kind of captured something maybe that was missing in the media of that real, like, just getting out in the woods and enjoying yourself and having a good crack with bikes. How did it all come about? Because you've been involved from the start, yeah?
Yeah, well, the 50-1 little thing was... All I can put it down to is Alex Rankin. The more I think about it, but, well, Alex Rankin and Dirtmag, because we grew up, me, Rat, Loose, Petey's was in the mix of it then, but we grew up looking, like, into Dirtmag as if it was the Bible, and the Earth and the Sprungs, you'd watch them, and it was just, like, the best thing you've ever seen, and the way... It went away from that, like, handheld cam, just the speediness of it, and that rawness. It was there in bits and bobs, but not. It didn't have a place where it, what it deserved, I thought.
Yeah.
Like, hey, up, look at that little mouse there, sitting between them logs.
Oh, yeah, fair enough.
Hey, up.
Nice. I wonder if he wants to come on for a chat.
I have to put some nuts out. where were we then, sorry, mate?
50-1.
Yeah. So, Rankin's films and Dirtmag are the reason we all ride bikes, and that's what inspired us, and that's what got us buzzing. And then doing all the racing and... Well, yeah, the racing, it takes it away from that, because you go into a race to race, and it's not necessarily what's the best line to ride, but if there's three sick turns, but then there's an inside that cuts all three of them, you're going to ride the straight line.
Yeah.
But you miss three amazing corners. It's about, it doesn't have to be a race for it to be enjoyable.
Yeah.
There are other ways of riding bikes that don't have to be competitive, and as I said before, there's always one winner, but 50 losers. Well, not to be 50-1, but 100 losers, you know what I mean? There's only ever one winner.
Yeah.
And if you're all going out to ride your bike and enjoy it, and that's what you do, and then everyone wins.
Nice ethos. Yeah. And how important do you think 50-1's been in, like, helping all of you guys with getting support from the industry and being able to get bikes and go on these trips? Like,
very important. It's real good. Well, it's Loose. Loose is, he's such an, like, he doesn't turn off other than when he's asleep, but he's up and he's going and he's buzzing, and he's just a real good driving force. And Rat, I mean, It just works. It's like, there never has to be a plan or anything like that. You just turn up, bikes come out, shovel, spade, and it starts happening. And then obviously the YouTube and the Instagram help it all get documented and puts it out there for everyone to see and hopefully get inspired by.
Yeah, it's definitely created a massive buzz and got a lot of people excited about riding and thinking about bikes in a different way, I think.
Yeah, it's mint.
Well, and now Alex is involved with it, right? Or he's been doing some filming with you guys.
Well, he's just a cool guy to have about. He knows what looks good, knows how to stick it all together, and he's intelligent. He's always got something you can learn from him.
Yeah.
Yeah, good dude.
Sweet. So, what's next on the 50-1 stuff? Have you got any projects coming up?
We have been working at working on a thing at Revs for the... It's the weekend of the National Champs. There's the Saturday night, we're having a bit of a jam. An invitational thing where I think we're aiming for 50 riders. And there'll be a bar, food, and then I think there'll be a showing of Vero's new film
cool.
that they filmed up there on that new line. So there'll be a showing of that. And then there won't necessarily be a competition sort of thing. It'll just be a huge variety of different riders. Like there'll be some BMX style riders and downhillers and dirt jumpers and stuff like that. And just a good get together, bit of a do. And, well, yeah, I'm sure we're going to see some real good riding.
Sweet. Have you done much work in the quarry then? Because this is the quarry that was quarry in of, the Atherton Diaries, was it, back in the day? They did a big line through there.
Yeah, they had a huge line that started at the top and just a big long jump line that came all the way down. And then they had the quartermasters there, big Red Bull thing with a huge drop in that was, well, it's scary. I've ridden down it on a hardtail, but I wouldn't want to do it on a BMX. But in that quarry, I mean, Harry Heath, Dave, Danny and James, and I'm sure there's other lads that have been there and we've not been there, but they've been going at it and they've created a masterpiece. And then we've just turned up last minute and made it, patted it in, took some pictures. And
nice.
Not claimed it, but you know what I mean.
I know what you're saying.
Yeah, they've put hours into it and they've done a great job. Yeah.
Cool. So it's going to be a pretty special event.
Yeah, and it'll be there forever and we can fine tune it if we need to. And hopefully we'll get another 50 to 1 jam at Revs like October time. So hopefully we'll be able to go ride it there with more people.
Yeah, cool. Yeah. So that's something that will ultimately be open to the public, is it? Or
no.
Okay.
It'll be too hard because it's pretty gnarly and you just have to have someone in the quarry at 24/7.
Right, okay.
People get lost up there, so.
Yeah.
And, well, yeah, but there'll be certain times where, well, we want to do more and more events where people can come and ride and build cool stuff for everyone to enjoy.
Nice. Yeah, I've heard from many people that you do a lot of work in the building side of things.
I love it, mate. From an early age, I'd go up the forest and just build tracks. And recently, we did the Dirt Factory indoor bike park in Manchester. That was really cool. January time, and it was snowing and raining outside, and we were indoors building a bike park.
Nice. Yeah, and that's just open this weekend gone, isn't it?
Yeah, they had an opening weekend. We were there on the Saturday, and although it was a really sunny day and it seemed daft riding indoors, it was still ace. And it was nice to see it dry out eventually because with it being indoors, there's no sunlight, no wind, and it just on a concrete floor, so it just stayed cold and damp. But it's hard packed now, and it's like a dirt skate park.
Cool.
And then outdoors, they've got a little one of them Scalectric style pump tracks. So you can have a blast around that and an airbag if you want to learn any tricks.
Nice. So, have to pay it a visit.
Yeah, it'll be perfect come winter.
Yeah.
When it's dark at 3, 4 o'clock. Get in there.
Wicked.
And you're in the town centre. Go and have a party after.
Perfect. You can see. Oh, so, what's your trail tool of choice? Have you got like a favourite tool that you use to work on stuff?
When we were on the Dirt Factory job, we were in skid steer bobcat things.
That's sweet.
That was a hell of a tool. But me go-to, I've got a shovel that my next door neighbour gave me. Well, it was actually his dad's, and his dad was a really good builder.
Yeah.
And I seen it as it come over the fence, and I was just like, wow. And I don't think it's left my van since.
Awesome.
It's been with me everywhere.
It's got some pedigree.
Yeah, it's... I'd hate to think how many tons of dirt he'd shovel with it, but I try and shovel as much as I can.
Excellent, good stuff. We need more people doing that. Oh, look, we've got company in the secret camp spot. Cool. So we'll start wrapping up, but a couple of things, I guess. From your perspective, as you see mountain biking now, What do you think it's doing well, and what do you think it could do better?
Mountain biking as a whole is doing very well, I think, isn't it? Jesus, it's massive. What is it doing well? Making loads of money.
Yeah, it seems to be, doesn't it?
It's a buzzing industry. There's so many decent bikes out there. Well, everything. Like, there's not just one brand in any component or tyres, wheels, anything. There's five or six that all make top-notch stuff.
Yeah.
Stuff. And what could it be doing better? I personally think they could have... Well, it's a tough one, this, but I think they could have a better World Cup series.
What would you change?
The tracks.
Okay.
Yeah.
Back to more the old school.
Yeah, harder to get down. But I think it's going into a bit more of a spectatory sort of sport, which I totally understand it. They can sell it then, because there's people buying it. Whereas if they were just selling it as, you can't see it, but it's really technical and it's dead hard to get down. They ain't going to sell much, are they?
No, true.
And
harder to cover for TV.
Yeah. So I totally see why it's how it's going the way it is. But if I was in charge, I'd go back 8 to 10 years. Schladming.
I was going to say, which tracks would you pick? I was expecting Schladming to be near the top.
But I heard one of the reasons they can't go there is because everyone's got too big a truck now.
Okay.
There's not enough place in the finish area to park all these Formula One trucks, which, I mean, they are fancy, but they're big.
They are massive. Huge. It takes up a lot of space, the World Cup these days, compared to what it used to.
Yeah, I mean, I remember, well, if a team had a sprinter van with like a wraparound awning that went just like parallel and round the back corner, that was like a big setup.
Yeah.
The rest were just a sprinter and easy ups.
Yeah.
But now if you're in a sprinter with an easy up, it's a privateer setup. Isn't
it? Basically.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah,
it seems it's definitely changed a lot, hasn't it? There's a lot of money in that side of it now.
Yeah, it's good to see. It's buzzing. But then you come to a race like this and there's not actually that many riders.
Yeah.
There's only 60 spots up for grabs and there's 600 riders that could be here. So it's hard to draw the line. Isn't it?
Yeah, it is tricky, isn't it? Do you think there's enough like feeder series, like at the national level and stuff, kind of good enough?
Definitely not.
Right.
I mean, you need 40 points to race a World Cup. And I think there's only one race in the UK where you can get points. And I think, the national here, I finished 15th and I got 1 point.
Hmm.
And then after a year, that point's gone. So how on earth are you meant to get 40?
Yeah, it's a bit, it bit of work to, to get into them these days.
And that's another reason I fell out of it, because it's the UCI, isn't it? It's their setup.
Yeah.
They're the winners at the end of the day. They love it.
Yeah. Yeah, it's tricky, isn't it? Because it's cool to see it growing. The coverage is great, like as a punter at home. Being able to sit and watch it on Ripple TV, and the job that Rob does in the booth is great.
Yeah, it is good. It's buzzing.
Yeah, and it's compared healthy. To like 5 minutes of coverage on Eurosport 15 years ago or whatever, it's good, but like you say,
it's hard to find the balance,
which
is what we're all after, I guess, isn't it?
Very true. Yeah. Oh, well, maybe one day we'll see the return of Schladming, who knows?
I'm going back. I'll do it on a stopwatch.
Yeah.
I don't even have to race it.
Unofficial World Cup.
Yeah,
let's try and squeeze it in between two of the European rounds. Make it happen.
Watch this space.
Job done. Can't be that hard, can it?
Yeah. There's an uplift there, isn't there?
Yeah, happy days. We'll sort it out after this.
Nice one.
All right, well, we'll wrap up with our three questions that we've asked everyone.
Cool.
First one of those is, if you had 150 quid, or if our listeners had 150 quid to spend to improve their performance or their joy of riding a bike, what would you recommend they spend it on?
Either a bumper weekend at Revs.
Yeah.
Go camping. Or, load up with food in your van. Drive to Revs. Put the cash on a table and just be like, how many uplifts can I get with this? And then just ride there.
There's a cracking place. Yeah.
Real good variety and quick uplift. You're never in a queue.
Yeah.
Yeah, great spot.
Yeah.
Or me and Craig both did our skills coaching thing, and I learned so much just by learning how to coach.
Yeah.
So I think that's pretty good.
Who did you do that with?
Ian Warby, Firecrest.
Oh, yeah. Firecrest down at Aston Hill.
Yeah, it was... Well, I'd never been to Aston Hill before. So me and Craig went down for the week, and good riding. And you just break stuff down and analyse stuff, and you do learn so much yourself. It's brilliant.
Nice.
And it's nice just chilling with people and do a bit of riding, and they'll tell you what they think and share ideas, and you always end up progressing.
Cool. We'll put some links to all of that stuff in the show notes so people can find it if they're interested.
Nice, yeah.
All right, if you could wind back the clock and sit down with yourself at the age of 16, what advice would you give him?
Straight away, I'd do the old diet thing. I'd say, watch what you're eating, pal.
Yeah.
There's this thing called vegan, and people are going to hate on you for doing it, but it's better for you... Better for the planet, better for every animal that doesn't have to be killed. And, well, it's scary when you read all them reports about the end of the human race. It's gnarly.
Yeah.
So anything to link with that, really. Try and share awareness of it, because it's not necessarily our lifetime, but if anyone have kids and that, it... could get very horrible for them.
Potentially, yeah, for sure.
If what they're saying is true.
Yeah.
But I don't see why they'd lie about all that.
Who knows? There's definitely some stuff that needs sorting, for sure. Yeah. Alrighty, and then the last question, if you could have a coaching session with anyone, past or present, who would it be and what would you want to learn from them?
Just mountain biking, or can it be
whatever you like?
Any sort of coaching. Because if it was mountain biking, I'd probably ring up Sam Hill and just say, can I ride with you for a day?
Is there anything specific about the way he goes about it that you'd want to try and tap into?
Just because he's different. Like, there's so many people that go fast on the same line, but 100 people could have ridden around a turn and no one else will go there, and he'll just nip through there.
Yeah.
It's good to see something be approached in a different way.
Yeah.
Different perspective.
Creative.
Yeah. And then if it wasn't biking, I mean, I'd probably want to learn how to surf. Surf or sail.
Okay.
Something on the water.
Yeah.
Because I'm scared of it. So if I could surf or sail, I'd kind of be less scared. It's powerful, isn't it, the ocean?
It is. I'm scared of it
too. So if you could figure out how to ride it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Nice. Have you ever had a go at surfing?
I've tried, yeah.
How did it go?
Did a lot of swimming. Stood up. We went to surf Snowdonia for a mate's stag do.
Oh, yeah.
And it was brilliant.
So this is the like fake wave thing.
Yeah,
so
it's consistent somehow. And it's the same every time.
Yeah.
But it's still really hard to get on.
Fun though.
Yeah, good fun. I'd hate to try it in the sea proper.
Yeah, fair play.
Yeah.
Cool. Well, if people want to find out a bit more about you and keep up to date with what you're up to, is Instagram the best place?
Yeah, I mean, I don't really know what happens with Facebook anymore. It's
all adverts.
Yeah. Although Instagram's getting bad for adverts, isn't it?
Yeah, they're sneaking more and more in, aren't they?
So God knows what the next
app
will be.
Yeah.
But yeah, either there, Instagram, Mac Forest. I'm up Mac Forest quite a lot,
okay.
Riding.
Yeah.
And then, yeah, any events. I might look like a big ute, but I'm not that dangerous, I promise. I'll always hang out. And
very approachable chap.
Yeah. Talk about bikes. Talk about food, talk about track building, talk about parties, anything.
Cool.
Yeah.
Good stuff. All right. Well, we hope you have a fantastic weekend in Scotland. I hope the race goes well. I hope the midges stay away and the sun stays out.
Yeah, we've been quite lucky, haven't we?
Yeah.
Pleasant.
It's pretty good so far.
Yeah.
Probably cursed it, but there you go. Cool.
Brill.
Nice Cheers, one, mate. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Cheers.
Nice one.
All right. That's it for our chat with Sam Dale. I hope you enjoyed listening. It was really nice to meet someone who's so genuinely stoked to be involved in the sport and is making it work for him in a way that suits his philosophy on life. Big thanks to PNW Components for supporting this episode. Don't forget, they've got an awesome listener discount for you all, so head over and check them out at pnwcomponents.com and use the code DOWNTIME at the checkout for 10% off. Please give us a follow on social media where we're at Downtime Podcast. Subscribe to the show so you get all of our episodes delivered straight to your device. And if you want to get yourself some exclusive Downtime Podcast goodies, then head to downtimepodcast.com/shop. All right, keep on telling your friends about the podcast and let them know what they're missing out on if they're not listening. We've got another awesome episode coming up real soon. But until then, get out and ride.